Thank you. And this is kind of a good segue, I think, too, for Dr. Grotto's presentation. And, you know, we're sort of thinking about policy at a very high level. And you know, what I've tried to do with some of my work is to help communities with, you know, implement some of these policies and sort of think about what to do locally. And so I guess, too, before I should start, I should also declare that to have no conflicts of interest to disclose. But I also, too, wanted to recognize the co-authors with me. These were my students that worked with me this past year on these two projects. And so I'll talk a little bit more about that. And you know, where sort of all this came about, too, was sort of thinking, too, about what I think our students need. And it was funny, I'm sure some of you probably watch The Office like I do. Of course, I don't watch as much now that Michael's gone. But, you know, at any rate, I was reading an Economist article, and it had, you know, a picture of Michael Scott in it, you know. And I'm thinking, why is Michael Scott in The Economist? And so, at any rate, you know, it was an article kind of talking about the death of middle management and sort of thinking about, too, the way that we instruct, you know, our students. And one of the things that really, you know, sort of resonated with me was that, you know, something that I had kind of thought and not these sort of in similar terms, but was what, you know, one of the experts they had interviewed for the article and then said, you know, the days of general managers, you know, who know a little about a lot of things are completely over. And I think that's true. You know, we think about the way that we've instructed our students are that, you know, they get a little organizational theory, they get a little epidemiology, they get a little quantitative methods, they get a little qualitative methods. And so, I find, too, that our students have, you know, difficulty thinking about what career that they really, you know, everybody wants to be in health because health is a place to be, but there are so many sort of, you know, niche places within it. So, you know, what I thought, too, was that I could work with some of them to help them sort of build this mastery. And again, you know, to think about, you know, where I believe the world is heading, you know, and again, it's working with complex teams, understanding how virtual communities work, and I think, you know, that's exactly right. And too, if we think about, you know, where, you know, this fiscal cliff, even, you know, even if it's resolved, right, I think, you know, funding for, you know, broad public health is going to be cut, and a lot of these functions are going to begin to fall back onto local communities. So how do we train people to have them ready to work at the local level? I think the other thing that kind of occurred to me, too, when I was thinking about this project was, you know, this idea of data democratization. And again, right, that you can find so much information, you know, out on the internet that's publicly available that was not available before. And I think, you know, what you'll see with some of the work that we've done is that, unfortunately, a lot of the health data is not there, right, because we have so much of the HIPAA, the patient protection, but all of those social determinants of health there. And that's this idea of the indicator movement, again, with, you know, the Healthy People 2020 and Healthy People 2010 and so on, that we have sort of these benchmark measures. And, of course, we see a lot of these at the, you know, even the you know, the state level, the national level, the county level. But for someone practicing within the county, I know what poverty is in my county, but where is it a problem? And so, and again, you know, even though we don't know health outcomes per se, we know the association with all of these. So it's sort of the aggregation of these. And what's really interesting is that, you know, these are so available right down to the census tract level with the American Community Survey. So these are a lot of things that we've done. So I'm going to try not to talk a ton from slides, and my students also appreciate this, too. I actually am trying to do an entire PowerPoint-free class this semester. So my students clapped on the first day when I told them I was going to do no PowerPoint. So at any rate, yeah, you know, it's been challenging. You know, I forgot how much of a crutch it really was. At any rate, this, you know, too, consulting centers are not new, but I borrowed this. You might see this a lot in business schools. I sort of borrowed this idea from from business schools, and you know all the good MBA programs have consulting centers. And I thought, you know, I really didn't see many for health. And I thought, well, this is how, you know, students can sort of begin to apply those skills that they've learned while they were here with us as a student. And so, again, you know, so what I had the students do was fill out an application and apply, but I also solicited organizations too. And so I think, you know, the key was to get applications from organizations that wanted help so that I knew and kind of vetted those before. You know, and again, I think service learning is a really big part of work today. And so, again, the links are these, but here, you know, is one that we did. And so, you know, what we did was that we put together websites, and we started thinking about most people don't really understand or have an opportunity to see this information or know that these things occur. And so the first one I'm going to talk to you about is this little community foundation called the Fremont Area Community Foundation in Newaygo County, Michigan. And Newaygo County is home to Gerber Baby Food, which is kind of an interesting phenomenon. And so, and what's really interesting about Fremont is that, you know, Gerber has been, you know, bought and sold a couple of times, from Novartis to Nestle is the current owner of them. And of course, they've moved a lot of the functions that used to be there in Fremont to the East Coast, you know, kind of where their U.S. headquarters are. And so, but, you know, so it was a very, very wealthy community at one time. And now, you know, a lot of people who lived there wanted to stay, but don't have jobs. And so, but what they began to talk to us about was that they give away about $10 million a year for a county with a population of less than 40,000 people. So where can they make investments in health? Where can they make appropriate investments in the people in their community? And that was sort of what we helped them do. And again, we started looking at thinking about, you know, what are some of these big issues. And so some of our students take a GIS course. So we started working with, and sorry, this may take a second to load, but so what we did, you know, again, was we took American Community Survey data and began mapping and analyzing these data. So, and all of this is stored out on the web. I can tell it's still trying to download. But let me go to our dashboard here too, and I'll just sort of talk about, you know, some of the things that we see. And you know, what I've noticed over the years too, and what I really appreciate about what the census has done with the adding the margin of errors on the American Community Survey data, is that everyone pays attention. Too many people pay attention to the nominal change, right? And so, you know, if you see, for example, you know, we were looking at the individuals living at 50% or below the federal poverty level, right? And so in the first three-year estimate between 2005 and 2007, 6.8% was below that level. And then between 2008 and 2010, it's 13.3%. Most people would say, yes, that's an increase, right? But because of the error in their measurement, it's not statistically significant. So those are the things that we're trying to help people. And so you'll notice that we purposely tried to sort of shrink the nominal levels and give people a way to look at this by thinking about the overall trend of these. And of course, you know, this is kind of sad, is what you're going to see is that, you know, all of these are, you know, sort of bad indicators. Child poverty is going up. So if we look at, you know, child poverty and we compare it to the U.S., statistically worse than the state of Michigan overall. And then we sort of did those at 50% and those at 185%. And then we, you know, again, we were trying to sort of appeal to a lot of, you know, people who will read and look and think about this in a way to look at this. Let's see if the map will ever load here. But I think, you know, and again, what you'll see here too is that if this map can ever load this data in, is that, you know, again, the differences right at the county level are, you know, they become even more pronounced when we begin to look at the areas within the county. So, you know, and again, so where are the problems? Where are the areas that really need that investment? So, I'm so sorry this is not loading. So I can tell it's still trying very hard. Let me go to a couple of others. So here is, you know, SNAP participation. You know, they've food stamps, obviously now, or what they call food stamps. And so SNAP participation, here's a little bit. Looks like maybe it's going to try. And so, you know, one of the things that the foundation was trying to do was to, you know, ensure nutritional adequacy. So, you know, there are a lot of community groups that are doing outreach to ensure that people have enough to eat. So, you know, a lot of this was trying to help organizations do community outreach, as well as those sort of the food pantries, and as well as to help enroll clients in SNAP. So disappointing when technology doesn't work. Let me see if this one will work. So I'll just keep trying here. I'm gonna shut this one down just so that it won't try not to keep loading. So this too, I think, is one of the more interesting maps that we did. Okay. So you'll see here. So again, these are census tracts, and you know, obviously, you can tell. You know, the bigger, the more populated counties, right, are going to have hundreds of census tracts. So I imagine there's probably 300 or 400 census tracts in this county where San Francisco is, if not more. So, but here is Fremont. So this was where Gerber was home to, and then this is White Cloud. And I think, you know, what's interesting here too, if we start looking and thinking about poverty, and you know, if we looked at child poverty is 39% here, adult poverty is about 22%, senior poverty is 10%, overall is about 23%. And you know, if you look here at White Cloud, it's about the same. They're you know, at similar rates. But the reasons for the poverty are very, very different. So if we start to look at educational attainment, and again, this will tell you a little more about Fremont, 90% have a high school degree, almost 26% have a bachelor's degree or more. So if we go to White Cloud, less than 80% have a bachelor's or have a high school degree, only 8% or less than 8% have a bachelor's degree. If we go to the job market, and I thought this was really interesting too, unemployment rate was about 13%, but the labor force participation rate. If you followed, you know, the election, this is one of the things that keeps getting brought up, you know, every time the unemployment statistics come out because of the labor force participation rate. And this to me is really telling here. If we go to White Cloud, again, sort of the unemployment rate is 15%, but the labor force participation rate is less than 60%. So the labor force participation rate is a function of unemployment and those that are working. So if we back out those that are unemployed, less than half of the adult population is employed in White Cloud. So the upshot, right, is that the solutions, I think, for Fremont and White Cloud are very different, right? And I think, you know, these are the things that we were trying to sort of help these local community groups do. Let me show you one other one, too. And this is a one that we've been working with sort of the and it's funny, too, you know, to have sort of the, you know, when you think about the different students and what they're talented at. And you'll see that this website is much, you know, the other one was kind of pedestrian. This one is actually, I'm sorry if it will load, so this one, right, is, you know, obviously kind of more visually appealing. But again, you know, sort of students applying their skills here. One of the things that I really like about this project was this was a very, very loose organization of this a group from the health department trying to organize the emergency food pantries and ensure that people have appropriate food to eat. And if you read all the literature on food pantries, too, that you know, most of the food that's donated, right, are not those, that pretty picture that Dr. Groton showed us with the vegetables in the aisle. You know, they get candy, they get sort of all of these sort of inappropriate foods that are donated for anyone that has any sort of nutritional needs. So, you know, what are some of the things that we worked on with these groups were doing these mobile pantries, and again, you know, to try to provide. And this site is still much more in a beta site, but you know, one of the things were that people just didn't know where the food trucks would show up. So we put them on a calendar, realizing that not everyone is going to have access to the internet. But now, so we have this a Google group. We're again trying to think about what are the most low cost ways that we can do this. So all of the pantries are able to go in and add to this calendar. So if they have a group, if they're going to do a food pantry, they're able to put this on and put the particulars on this. The other thing that we've been talking about doing with these agencies is to also allow them, because we've noticed that a lot of the people who come have special dietary needs. And so some of our pantries focus on senior populations. Some focus on population with diabetes, and some focus on, that sort of tend to focus on pregnant nursing populations too. So this is, I think too, an idea of sort of having this sort of central conduit to bring groups together. And again, sort of what we were thinking, a lot of you'll see the same. And here are one of the mobile pantries. And this is really kind of interesting is that, Kraft gave this truck to our food bank of West Michigan. And then this kind of cycles through some pictures here. And then, what were some of the things that we did? And again, I hope these maps will work here. They work better on a faster network. So it looks like this is going to load. So and one of the things here too is that anyone can go in and find out where these food pantries are, and they're clickable. What we want to do too eventually again is to go back and talk to the pantries and have them sort of talk about the specialty items that they may have, so that. Because this map actually looks like, a fairly robust network. But when you take away the pantries that are only open, more than once or twice a month, it really, really goes down. So we, even though this is a good first step, we need to add a lot more detail to this. This too, again, sort of coming back to the indicators piece, and one of the things that the students did, and I think too, when we think about data democratization, was that a lot of this is sort of a summary index. We think about how do we plan and sort of because people may look at poverty, they may look at the proportion of those with transportation barriers, et cetera. So after we reviewed the literature, we looked and developed this index. And again, what's kind of cool about all this online stuff is that you can click. So what the literature sort of told us was that what are the sort of the three big things that most of the literature cite: proportion of the population, 185% of poverty. Single-headed households with children, the percent of the population with less than a high school degree. So we created an index score, from 0 to 100 based on each of those. So you can kind of look and see which of those. And here's Holland, Michigan, if you've ever sort of heard, the tulip capital of the world. That's where the tulip time is. And, of course, we also overlaid these are the farmers markets, and so again, trying to help make these resources more accessible. I think You know, two, one of the best maps that we have are this, and I don't want to take credit for this because we pulled this off. Someone else had done this, but this is a map that shows the proportion of the population with access to a supermarket, which is obviously, you know, very, very important. And so this is a density map. And of course, it's scalable. And each one of these little dots represents 10 people in poverty. And those in these white areas, you know, do not have good access to a supermarket. And, you know, what's interesting, you know, as you see, just like you would probably expect, are that, you know, those of low income, you know, typically don't have great access to supermarkets. And of course, you know, that's where nutritious foods are at a much, much lower price. So at any rate, there's and again, you're welcome to view any of those. Final thoughts, I thought, you know, and again, providing opportunities to students to solve real problems and allowing them to begin, you know, to be ready to take on some of these jobs, I think, at local levels, to work in collaborative teams, I thought was very appropriate. Broad community participation. You'll see, you know, the Fremont site, we had one group to work with. So that site, you know, went much more smoothly than the Ottawa County one, because you know there were so many of these pantries, you know, who want this and that, and everyone changes their minds. So that one again, you know, is still a work in progress. I think, you know, too, what were we trying to do? Think about data visualization in a very important way, and I think, you know, those are going to be very key, you know, going forward, and really thinking about solving problems at local levels. And of course, you know, too, we did this for virtually no cost. I mean, you know, that's what's so interesting about it. All of those maps are hosted for no cost online. You know, if you have the software, and we purchased the domain for the Feeding Ottawa. I think it was $10 through GoDaddy. They're hosting the site for $40 a year. I mean, it's really amazing. You know, how inexpensive it is and how easy it's become to do this as well. And, you know, there are so many drag-and-drop web design programs today, too, so you don't need to know HTML code. You know, if you ever try to do Dreamweaver the first time and you threw up your hands and went, I'll let somebody else do this. You know, there are much, much easier and better options today. And, again, all of these were done without anybody doing any web programming. So, there's the website, too. I'm sorry it's so cantankerous there with so long, but because it's sort of hosted on my server, and I've got some cards, too. If anybody would care for one, don't want to write that down, you're welcome to contact me, and I can send you any information. So.